Irish Illustrated Insider is sponsored by VisitSouthBend.com. Is it time to check a Notre Dame home game off your bucket list? Has it been too long since you've soaked in the game day atmosphere in person? Whether it's for the first time ever or in a while, start planning your trip to South Bend to watch the Fighting Irish with ideas and inspiration at VisitSouthBend.com.
Welcome, everybody, to a bye week Thursday, October 19th. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated. We're joined by Pete Sampson of The Athletic. We don't have a game to talk about this weekend other than the handful that I'm looking forward to seeing this weekend.
Yes.
But coaches are on the road, as expected, after a few days of practice. 3 days, I think, that they were together. Coaches are on the road. And there's been a lot of questions about, as we reach this point, two things. One, what bowl game will Notre Dame go to? And that's where we call on Pete Sampson to lend his expertise. And then, but mainly, which Notre Dame players currently on the team do we expect back? Which guys are leaving for the NFL? Which guys are going to take a sixth year, a fifth year, et cetera? So we're going to start first with players. It's something that's been asked a lot, and I'm addressing it in Thursday Thoughts today. And I think the guys that we're pretty sure are going to leave are Audric Estime, Joe Alt, J.D. Bertrand, Jack Kaiser, and Zeke Correll. Those are the five that I would say, I don't know if I'd say they're the most likely, but you guys jump in here, please, and join the conversation.
I agree with Kaiser, Bertrand, Alt, and Estime, and I would say Howard Cross. Hard to be better than a first-team All-American if he comes back. So that would be that's his potential ceiling if he keeps it up this year. Zeke Correll makes sense for multiple reasons. I don't know how much better he'll get as a sixth-year center at Notre Dame. Is it possible they would want to move into the Ashton Craig era with Zeke Correll now?
They may be ready to do that.
Although you'd still rather have both, right? If you're a coach for Notre Dame, it's not like Zeke Correll hurts you for having him on the roster.
No, I guess it's in my mind. I always thought that like Pat Coogan, who took some reps at center a while ago, would play center, and then Billy Schroth would start with Spindler, and that would be your interior three. But
that would also be a way where you say to Zeke, maybe try your hands at the NFL. Joe Real and Marcus Freeman don't not want Zeke Correll on the team.
My sense is that Correll doesn't want to come back. And we're talking about 6 year, man. I mean, Howard Cross, I mean, I didn't include him in that because I don't have necessarily any feedback per se, but I totally agree with you, Tim. I mean, there is nothing for him to prove in a college football level anymore.
Cam Hart for sure should leave. He should be medically advised to leave and try to make the NFL right now instead of a
I didn't even consider him because
he was so good. You didn't even consider that guy.
Yeah.
Who do you think they could pay to stay?
Well, I think here's the guys on my list that I'm looking at here, Tyree Mills and Leafau. I think it's in the best interest of all three of them. I'm trying to look at it objectively. I think it's in the best interest of all three of them coming back. And Notre Dame needs them to come back. And Blake Fisher, let's stop talking about Blake Fisher from the perspective that we were before the season started or last year. He's not ready for the NFL. He needs to come back as well.
Yeah, I mean, for Fisher, like the carrot to come back is like, you want to play left tackle? All right, let's play left tackle. I think that's like one. He was already an NIL guy. For Notre Dame, that would continue, with him and Ben Morrison, and like there would be slots open if there's a new Hartman, but Estime probably won't be here. I would say, like, if I was looking at, all right, okay, who would be like a day three pick, and essentially you're making more money by staying in school at that point potentially, like Mills, right. Cross, Leafau, Watts, Fisher. I think all those guys would make sense.
Tyree also, right, Pete?
Tyree. Yep.
I keep forgetting Tyree has more eligibility, honestly. Like, I have a mental block with him. I think that he's down to his last year, and he's not.
I would advise Cross, if this I don't know how much better football Cross can play to take a shot and be a healthy guy going to the NFL. If I was trying, I mean, Howard Cross coming back would be great for Notre Dame. They're going to ask him. But I know he can make a little more money here. I feel like if he starts his NFL career and he becomes a viable, he becomes Isaac Rochelle in a different way. He has started his career healthy. Do you think he gets drafted higher next year than he does this year after the year he's having?
I wonder if Cross, like what, I think Cross is a great college football player who may not be a pro prospect.
Totally agree, but I bet he wants to try.
Sure. I mean, who wouldn't? Yeah.
I don't think he dominates on the professional level like he does the collegiate level, but I think that he's in the NFL for quite some time. There's just, I mean, he, you know, good teammate, great tools, other than, you know, the God given height, but
yeah.
I mean, I think he hangs in the NFL for a long time. The new guys to consider, I guess, Xavier Watts after a game of a lifetime, Mitch, and really Mitchell Evans. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. He's hardly developed in a handful of games, but again, size, strength, good blocker, catches well.
I would put him in the gets a lot better by staying too.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that.
There's a lot of tread left on that tire. You know, like if he comes back, he's what's his name? I'm blanking on the tight end, the Mackey Award type contender. I mean, he'd probably be a preseason All-American versus Brock Bowers isn't going to be there anymore. You know, he would come back with a lot of fanfare, which, like, it's not something I would have expected to say 2 months ago.
And I'm sure, and I'm sure Mitchell Evans himself really didn't give any consideration to that preseason. Xavier Watts needs more college seasoning, but you know, when you have a game like that, I don't know where his head is. It's probably in the stars, because that was a pretty ridiculous performance.
I would think if he does that against Clemson and on a January 1st bowl game, he could consider, hey man, let's go.
If he picks up Jaden Daniels three times in a bowl game, like that would be something. Yeah.
What about Jordan Batella?
He's the hardest one for me because obviously he needs to come back, but he's had a journey at Notre Dame. Quite a journey at Notre Dame, and maybe he would want to go. He could develop maybe a lot by coming back. Maybe he could develop pass rush moves that would help him.
Couldn't you see him just, I mean, there are some guys who like, hey, you know what? I want to play 65 snaps somewhere instead of 25 snaps here. Yeah. Like I
could, especially if he has a degree.
There'll be guys that go that route too, where it's like, we talk about guys leaving. It's not just for the NFL. Sometimes guys leave to get more opportunity.
Yeah, I think that would actually be a pretty good decision on his part. And I, you know, it was like, Tyler Buchner, go ahead and leave Notre Dame. We totally get it. But go somewhere where you're going to play all the time. You know you're going to play.
Don't you guys think that's the first guy we've named today on the podcast that would leave? Not that there's not other guys. That's the first guy we've named that would leave for somewhere else to play college football, though, possibly.
I don't know how it would make sense for anybody else.
That's what I'm saying. Kaiser, Correll.
I mean, among the front runner guys. Maybe Kaiser would love to play 65 snaps too with probably a couple Notre Dame degrees. I don't know exactly where
he has two already. That would be an interesting one. Okay, if Bertrand's gone, that's a lot of reps to go around. But I think if you're Kaiser, you've been in the lineup, you've been out of the lineup, you may just want to be like, you know what, I'm going to go.
I think so too. Bertrand's got to, because he's got to start hitting for professional money if he can.
Yeah. You know, no, I mean, Bertrand.
That's like a running back situation for him at this point. Like, go get hit for your career. He's a violent physical player that needs to be paid for.
Right. Real. And that frame is only going to hold out for so long. No, he needs to move on. And he will. I think Kaiser will too. Leofau, I mean, I love his toolbox, but he should stay. He's taken huge strides this year, but he still has a ways to go. I just think it would definitely be in his best interest to do that.
I want to throw this out there because I don't think you guys were sitting down. It was me and Hanson last time with Blake Fisher. Eric asked him about playing left tackle, And Fisher gave him a look like, I have not repped at left tackle once in 2 years, and I have no interest in it.
Well, maybe, yeah,
I mean, that's what,
maybe in the season, but even going into next year?
He didn't say that, of course, but the surprise to me was he's like, it would be way more difficult. Like he goes, it's 100% different than right tackle. And I was like, wow, I've never heard anybody kind of delineate so much like, oh no, mm-hmm. I'm a right tackle. We didn't go further and further on it. I am telling you exactly what happened. That's how that went down. I was shocked at the response was, oh gosh, no. Like,
that's pretty strange.
Yeah. It was.
Maybe he's thinking, damn, I'm struggling at right tackle. I don't want any part of left tackle. Anyway, those are some of the guys. I don't know.
Nana could come. They could. Nana would.
Nana, I didn't want to mention him. He would be a sixth year. I remember asking him specifically last year. And of course, he was in no position since he hadn't started his fifth year yet. They could use him. I thought he definitely played one of his better games against USC this past week.
For people wondering, Carter and Ford, the transfers, do have another year, and it's always seemed to be planned they're going to stay for Notre Dame for that year.
I mean, I'm not mentioning everybody. There are other guys that have, you know, eligibility left, but those seem to be the ones that are on the front burner. So, hey, let's move to bowl options here. Pete, we rely on your expertise and ability to wrap your mind around all the inner workings of it, which I have no ability to do it. I've tried. I have no ability to do it. So I throw my hands up and I accede to Mr. Pete Sampson.
Yes, cede the floor. The most likely options seem to be the ReliaQuest Bowl on January 1st. For Notre Dame to be eligible for that, a Big Ten team has to go to the Orange Bowl. Which, with Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State being as ranked as highly as they are, is pretty likely. If that happens, then it opens up ReliaQuest against an SEC opponent. I sort of joked about Xavier Watts picking off Jaden Daniels in the bowl game. But that would, if you've been pining for the Notre Dame LSU, and I know who you are because you kept sending me Twitter notifications all last December about it, and I said, it's not happening. It could happen, which would be insane. I'm not entirely sure the world is ready for it, but that could happen. Pop-Tarts Bowl is the old Camping World Bowl, which is the old Champ Sports Bowl, which was briefly, the Cheez-It Bowl. That's the one in Orlando. That's against a Big 12 team.
Iowa State rematch. I like it. Iowa State's right there for us this year, right?
Yeah. I don't.
That's what I want to cover that game.
I don't know if Iowa State is bowling this year,
Tim. Oh, no, they're not. It's okay. No, it's the same. It's another Iowa State that shows up and plays Notre Dame. So that'd be fun.
And then look, I understand the question is like, all right, well, what are the odds of Notre Dame going to a New Year's Six if they go 10-2? I think they're, 50-50. Maybe a little less than that. It's like not the at-large spots are the Cotton has an at-large spot. Peach has two at-large spots. Fiesta has one at-large spot. So those are your options. So then you just look at, all right, who are the, can Notre Dame be better than four Power Five non-conference champions? So like on our bowl prognostication on The Athletic, we have the at-large teams going to Oregon, Alabama, Penn State, and Texas. Like that's a pretty reasonable outlook. Even if Notre Dame went 10-2, I don't know if they would jump any of those teams. But there's like, look, what you need is if you're Notre Dame is like you needed Alabama to lose to Arkansas, or you need Texas to do a Texas and like lose to somebody they shouldn't. All that's reasonable. Or in the Big Ten, they've got Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State. Like one of those schools needs to lose to two of the other ones. In Penn State, that's possible, if not likely. So you want Ohio State to win this weekend if you're looking for a New Year's Six.
Is the weird Orange Bowl tie-in? I mean, the weird ACC highest ranked available team tie-in at play for the Orange Bowl?
Right. Yeah. So if Notre Dame went to the Orange Bowl, which they won't, because then the Orange Bowl is actually the hardest of the New Year's Six games for Notre Dame to get to, because they have to be ranked over every SEC, every Big Ten team that did not win their conference. But if Notre Dame was to go to the Orange Bowl, then they could end up playing like North Carolina or Florida State, which I think would be awesome. But it's almost impossible. Like 11-1 is sort of the minimum to go to the Orange Bowl.
The Orange Bowl.
Yeah.
And 9-3 still works for the ReliaQuest?
It does. It's like they sort of like an ace. They would have to, you know, you probably would have to pick Notre Dame over Clemson. And like, let's say that Notre Dame lost to Clemson, but Clemson's probably going to lose another game anyway. So it's like 9-3, 9-3. They will be within like the one game parameter. Like you can't pick 8-4 Notre Dame over 10-2 Clemson, but you can pick 8-4 Notre Dame over 9-3 Clemson, or 9-3 Notre Dame over 10-2 Clemson.
If Notre Dame loses to Clemson and Clemson has a worse record than Notre Dame, there's a 0% chance some of the ReliaQuest doesn't want Notre Dame to play LSU instead of Clemson play LSU.
You are 100% correct on that one. Like that, a Brian Kelly Notre Dame bowl game would be.
Oh my God.
It's like it'll be bigger than one of the two New Year's Six games for people for watching, at least, if not.
Notre Dame is like crushing it already in terms of like television audiences this year. Like that will be that would be off the charts.
That would just be awesome. That would
name
be
a bowl matchup, Priester and Samson. Name a bowl matchup outside the playoff that draws more eyes than Notre Dame and LSU at 10-2 in the ReliaQuest Bowl. There is not. Can you get two teams? Ohio State and someone.
Oklahoma and USC, probably for the same reason Notre Dame and LSU would be interesting.
Yeah.
We would have, who was that, Pete? Who'd you say?
Oklahoma and USC.
A Lincoln Riley thing.
Ah, yes, that would be good. But just think, we'd be privy to, you know, Brian Kelly's tremendous press conference sense of humor once again. It would just, just crack us up.
I sent you the Columbia jackets.
Yes, that was terrible. Okay.
All right.
You guys agree he was funny in smaller groups, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he has a great sense of humor in one-on-one situations.
I thought so too. They're just really bad in press conferences. So. Just never had it.
The Columbia reference was just awful. I mean, it was just a terrible. And then he tries it. That was a joke, you know, like, you know, the media is really missing out on this.
Yeah.
They're like, oh no, we know that was a joke. It just was bad. Yeah.
It's such a weird one. Like, I'm so used to his bad press conference humor that I didn't even find that weird until someone said it to me. I was like, oh yeah, he shouldn't have said anything.
I saw it, and it was, you know how those are, like when you're in the crowd and he says it and you feel embarrassed for him. That's how I felt watching that recent reference.
He was funny in those small groups. He was funny. He really was. Like pre-press conference, especially like the Thursdays or like the golf outing ones, he had a very funny sense of humor. I don't know what happened when he got in front of like 12 more people, because some of those things only have like 20 people.
Yeah. Well, sign me up for that matchup. But for Notre Dame's sake, and I know a lot of fans, that a New Year's Six Bowl would be preferred, I guess, maybe a
cross. Well, all right, let me posit this to you. Would you prefer Notre Dame to go to the New Year's Six and beat Penn State? Or would you prefer Notre Dame go to the ReliaQuest Bowl and beat Brian Kelly?
I'd rather go win a New Year's Six game against Penn State, but not against some rando team you can throw out there for me.
Like Air Force.
No.
But Penn State. Notre Dame Penn State would be a tremendous matchup. The old independents squaring off against each other.
What about Oregon? I'm trying to think of like a brand name Power Five team that's like fun. Not brand name. Would you rather beat Oregon in the Cotton Bowl on December 29th, or would you rather beat LSU and Brian Kelly in the ReliaQuest Bowl on January 1st?
I think it's the latter.
I think it is too. It is.
Who would you rather lose to? You're a Notre Dame fan.
Oh, Oregon. Oh, Oregon, geez.
Oh, man.
It's not a guarantee.
I mean the stakes of the LSU game would just... Ugh. People, I think Michael Mayer actually might go come back and use his last game of eligibility.
I was just going to say people would play. Everybody would be, I'm playing. This is ridiculous.
Kyle Hamilton, I'm still eligible, I think.
Hey, this episode of Irish Illustrated is presented by Underdog Sports. We see a lot of you are downloading Underdog using the promo code and having fun, which we love to see. If you haven't already checked them out, be sure to do so. It's super easy to use. You go on the app and pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total than what is listed. For example, if Travis Kelce's number is set at 50 yards and you know Taylor Swift is in the house, you may feel confident he's going to be way higher than that number. Do that with 2 to 5 different players and you're in business. If you go 5 for 5, you can multiply your money times 20. So sign up today with promo code Irish and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with my promo code Irish to get your first deposit doubled up to $100. There are a lot of fantasy companies out there, but we decided to partner with Underdog because it's the easiest place to play fantasy sports. It's also the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org. We'll be right back with Burning Up the Boards.
If you're coming to a game this season, you have to check out Game Day Your Way, the official tailgate service provider of Notre Dame. Game Day Your Way offers everything you need, including tailgate gear, catering, and even beverage delivery right to your spot. And their Irish Express transportation from Chicago allows you to tailgate while you travel to their all-inclusive party zone in South Bend. Let Game Day deal with all the hassle so you can focus on the fun. For tailgates, tickets, transportation, and more, visit GameDayYourWay.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Some things are just made for each other, like tailgates and touchdowns. We're adding one more pair to the list, Aer Lingus and college football. Join us in Dublin this August for the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Too soon? Plan your winter or spring break now with non-stop flights from cities including Chicago, Boston, Los Angeles and New York. Fly in comfort to Dublin, our European hub. Go coast to coast and discover the sights of Ireland or explore any of the 50 plus European cities we connect to, including Amsterdam, London, Paris and Rome. Visit airlingus.com to book today.
Welcome back to segment 2, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question is from Beast Texan. Who is your top breakout player for the team so far? And he offers Evans, Cross, Watts, and if we want to throw anybody else in there.
Yeah, I wouldn't include, I don't think you guys would either, Howard Cross. He had a breakout year last year, so I wouldn't put him in that category. And this is actually, John Bryce is going to have a story today or tomorrow, just kind of getting all of our opinions about various, you know, breakout players, et cetera. Mine is Evans. I just didn't expect that kind of ability, that kind of athleticism. Strength, we know him as a blocker. He's still a tremendous blocker. But what he's done in the last, I guess he kind of got held up a little bit by USC, but the stretch of games leading up to that, he's been really, really good. I didn't anticipate that happening. Watts wouldn't even be on the list if it wasn't for last week. So I don't like to make a pick based upon one game.
I think Watts has had a really good season. And then last week was just ridiculous. I might actually pick somebody off the list because travel back in time with me to the Blue Gold game. And what had Javonte Jean-Baptiste shown you that made you think like, well, this guy's going to help. And I think he's been outstanding.
He's been tremendous. We didn't see anything of him in the spring. And I'm sure that there were moments where he was pretty good, but again, he's learning a new, he's around new people, new system. You know, you got to cut a guy.
He opened training camp in the fall as a number two.
Yeah. Well, he didn't start the first guy. You know, I thought Asafa Mensah would probably start most of the year, but JJB was just too good to go that route.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at our lists, Priester and I had Priester, you had same as me, had Watts 12th preseason. That's high. He's about 10th right now. He's been very good. I had Evans 13, so I loved Evans. However, I liked Evans so much, I still think he's the breakout player, even though I had him the 13th ranked player on the team coming in. That's how good he's been for me. Yeah. Great point on JJB. I hadn't thought of that. Creetster and I ranked him very close. We were one away. I forget what it was. This is bad radio again. 24 and 25.
Yo.
That's a big difference.
Well, we didn't. I mean,
Evan Sinclair had him 17. He had him up there. You know who's way below what we had, Priester? Not to put us on blast here with no one to ask for it. I had Carter 20 and you had Carter 20, the transfer.
Yeah, I just thought he'd hit the ground running. That was probably pretty foolish. He wasn't even a safety before coming to Notre Dame, so that was pretty we like the skill set is what we liked. And it's still there. He's doing a nice job on special teams. He'll play a more prominent role next year, especially if Watts were inclined to leave. DJ Brown, you know, will finally be gone after 6 years. So, preseason picks, man. They're hard to do sometimes.
Yeah, but I love Mitchell Evans, and he's way better than I
thought. You did great. You did great on that. I had him, 16th or 18th or something?
Yeah, but I mean, he's been great. It's just...
Yeah.
I was still surprised every time he did it for 2 weeks. All those catches. I'm like, oh my God, it's Mitchell Evans. Now it's just like, I can't believe Mitchell Evans had a ball knocked out of his hands is how good he's become.
Yeah. You know, and he did not catch it well at all at NC State. I mean, was that pre-concussion or post-concussion?
Pre-concussion, he missed Central Michigan.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, and then coming out of Central Michigan, that's when he broke out. There was no way to anticipate that. He's doing a great job. Hope he comes back. Question from Jay Burke 87. Where did that pressure from the D-line come from against USC? Why hadn't we seen more of that before? What changed where they could get pressure on the quarterbacks without linebackers blitzing?
I mean, they have had really good pressure this season, with the exception of game and a half, maybe the Louisville game. They didn't have very good pressure. They had tremendous pressure against Duke, as Pete pointed out. That's why they won the game.
Yeah.
When I kept lumping the lines accidentally by saying the lines. You're like, well, one line played bad and one line played great. Now they got home and they got their sacks in this one. Some of it is they had Caleb Williams in a position where he had to rally the troops at the end. He had to stick in there a little bit more. I mean, what a scheme by Al Golden. We heard all about it on the broadcasts, and they executed. No offense, guys do have to make tackles. Golden's not a puppeteer. He was able to let some guys make tackles, and they made them.
The combination of plan and execution against that level of offense is just off the chart. I'm sorry. Yeah,
it was chef's kiss for Al Golden. But I would say, like, their pressure rate is, I think, been misunderstood all season because their sacks have been down. Like, they've had a top 10 pressure rate pretty much all year. And it's the reason that they've created as many picks as they have. You know, they haven't got as many sacks as they would have liked until last weekend, but the ability to get pressure with just four has been a shock to me. That the defensive line position is not just most improved. I think it's a straight revelation for me because I did not think that they were going to have the horses on the D-line at all. And man, they've been outstanding.
And not to nitpick, but I mean, they did bring five the whole time against USC. They were bringing,
oh, that's true.
They were bringing blitzers against USC, but you have Caleb Williams there. You can't, it's.
Well, they were disguised very well, which I'm sure USC would agree with that. Part of this question is what changed where they could get pressure. You know what changes every week? The offensive line that you go against. You can't judge Notre Dame just Notre Dame. It's the opponent that they're going against too. Now it's been better than, as Samson pointed out, it's been better than Jay Burke 87 anticipated, but this is something I'm always going back to. There's another team playing and the other team plays a role in dictating what happens on the field. I think we forget that when we're cheering for one team over another. Back-to-back questions here from FJ Cat. Starting with FJ Cat, Tommy Rees did more with less as an offensive coordinator last year. Jared Parker appears to be learning on the job and has become predictable as demonstrated by defenses of late. He has four or five games to prove himself. Do you think Marcus Freeman will stick with Parker if the offense continues at its current level? And then a question from Irish Fire Captain. What are your thoughts on Notre Dame bringing in someone to help Parker? Is that a possibility or something that's just not in the cards?
Pretty excited. We have somebody talking positively about Tommy Rees on a what he did with the offense last year. I don't remember that last year when he was here.
We referenced the Stanford game just a couple minutes ago.
Yeah. They would be doing a lot more with Sam Hartman as the quarterback with if Tommy Rees was the offense coordinator. I think that that is true. I believe that to be true, but we'll never know.
No, we won't. Bringing in somebody to help Parker, I don't think that's reasonable.
I think that would have been.
I don't even know what that would mean at this point. There's four games left.
No, they mean next year. It means next year.
If he were to come back,
that would have been prudent this year. The Bob Elliott, the late Bob Elliott type that would come be the advisor, the David Cutcliffe type. I'm not David Cutcliffe, but you know, there's guys like that exist. That would have been a good idea for a first year coordinator, I do think, in the offseason, last offseason.
Do you think Marcus Freeman will stick with Parker if the offense continues at its current level?
So against these four teams, if Notre Dame averages, well, this is tough because they scored against USC. So if Notre Dame's somewhere in the 23, 24 points a game the rest of the year against these four teams, that would be underachieving offense for the bulk of the season. You would call it an underachieving offense. Because you do have to you have to weight the games like Tennessee State's offense and Navy's offense. Navy's offense was important because you had to go win that first game. I understand. They played great, executed great. You do have to weight the offense's efforts against the nine power five. And if you started doing that now, you know that their scoring level is not what it needs to be compared to Tennessee State, Central Michigan, and Navy. I hate using Navy because Navy's a tough opening. Like, you don't know what's going on in that game.
I get operationally, they were outstanding.
They're outstanding.
And that was just like, all right, you've cleared the first hurdle of being a power five college offense. Like, that's being operationally sound is not something that you want to be talking about in week eight. I think that, you know, the USC scoring output is not really down to the offense. You could make an argument that the NC State scoring output was like, they did some great adjustments in that game. They also had some short fields to work with. And like, I don't know if, you know, it's like the 80-yard touchdown run was great. But it's we're at five power five teams at this point. The offense has played well in one of them.
I think the offense played well against Ohio State. And if we're going to nitpick what they did against NC State, maybe we should say they had a 71-yard drive against Ohio State where they didn't score. They had a 75-yard drive to score, a 96-yard drive to go ahead. Like, these are, they had 0-3 and outs against Ohio State.
That was wild.
I mean, they played well that game.
Melly and I are going to pound the drum on the Ohio State performance forever.
I actually agree with Pete on this, though. I thought Notre Dame's offense, considering everything, played better against Ohio State with no three and outs than NC State when they had six three and outs. Like, at least the argument exists.
That's a reasonable position.
What about had you scored 45 against Ohio State?
Where are the deep shots? Where are the deep shots, Tim?
They're gone. They're gone. It's I think in the last four games, Hartman on passes of 20 plus yards is, let me pull it up. I got it in front of me. 2 of 16.
Name one guy that can go deep except the guy that caught a deep touchdown pass.
Well,
first four games on passes of 20 yards or more, 9 of 12, 374 yards, 6 touchdowns. Last four games, 3 of 16 for 110 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And I would agree, you know, that Hartman he hasn't thrown the ball as accurately in the last four games as he did in the first four. And there are reasons for that. You know, Pete, I think you mentioned it last Thursday. Is his knee still bothering him but the demarcation was the Central Michigan game. But the whiteouts. I did a story earlier this week about, you know, targets, and you know, a guy like Merriweather can go deep, but it's just, it's such a low percentage decision that, you know, they've chosen not to do that a whole lot. So,
I gotta, like, this is probably not enough deep shots if you think about it, but 19 for 36 deep. So this is over 20 yards, 10 touchdowns and zero interceptions. I think that's a pretty good job, deep effort by a quarterback, don't you? 10 touchdowns, zero picks, though 19 of 36. So he's over 50%, but 10 touchdowns, zero picks. That's a heck of a job. And you're looking at about, 600 yards. Would you take that for a deep passer?
Yeah. So, like, the way
Drew Pine last year for Notre Dame.
Okay. I was going to say, I thought you were saying that was Hartman or something. I was like, those numbers don't add up.
That's Drew Pine last year.
Yeah. I mean, Drew Pine was a really good play action passer, and Sam Hartman, for reasons that are completely over my head, is not.
And I don't get that either. I don't.
Because that's like Drew Pine's deep shots were often off play action. He was a good play action passer because he's a good deep shot thrower. He wasn't a good deep ball thrower, but he was a good play action passer is how I would. He
wasn't a good deep ball thrower. I agree. But
Jason Garrett say during the game?
Yards.
He said it. He said it more than this past week. He said it at least two, maybe three times that Sam Hartman's the best deep ball quarterback in college.
Yeah, what? That was a strange one to me.
I mean, it's based upon a lot of when he was at Wake Forest.
No, I know.
He had a really great wideout core in 2022. Yeah,
Sam Hartman this year, by the way, is 10 touchdowns and zero picks deep. Yeah. But he is 14 for 30, 16 for 38. It's about the same.
I have him,
he was great early. That's
12 of, I have him at 12 of 28, which, like, if you are a little under 50% on deep shots, like, that's actually really good. The problem is, like, you can't be 3 of 16 over a 4-game stretch.
Well, especially the 4-game stretch.
Yeah. The lack of play action. Does that
make any sense to you?
What sense does that make with Audrey?
Well, it's like, when he's done it, he hasn't been good. And if you look at his Wake Forest career, his completion percentage off play action, I believe, was lower than straight drop back all 4 years.
Yeah, I remember looking at that, and I wondered if it was a function of their offense, but now it turns out maybe it was not a function of their offense.
Wasn't their offense, everything was play action?
That's why I didn't understand what they were saying was play action.
Made no sense. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
Because the people want more play action, but it's like actually not an efficient use of Sam Hartman's skills based on Sam Hartman's statistics.
All right, we're going to move on to another question here. We are on that one for like 20 minutes. Irish from A2, how many of the current coaches on the staff will be on the staff next year? Over, under 4.5?
Over.
There's 10 coaches.
Over.
Yeah, I'm over on that too.
There we go. We made up for the 20-minute question. Over.
Yeah.
That's under. January is not going to be pleasant.
Because everybody wants to know, who are the 5 that are leaving?
I don't see that listed on here. There is.
You guys can tackle that on Monday's podcast next week.
Well, I mean, just you know, I'm not going to say this guy. Well, I am going to mention a couple names here, but just because of the circumstances, Dylan McCullough wants to be in the NFL.
Yeah, we've been saying that since we interviewed him the first time we interviewed him. So yeah, it's okay to stay on theme here.
Then the person, he wants to be a head coach. I think that he feels like it's about to happen for him. Chris O'Leary was on the verge of, almost had an opportunity to be in the NFL. Those are two that come to mind. I know that, again, those probably aren't the people that.
Well, Mike Mickens will be wanted by many. He's developed cornerbacks at an alarming rate, rate.
L. Golden's opportunities certainly have opened up tremendously here in the last month.
Yes, they have.
Pretty astonishing, considering he was committing fireable offenses to many a few weeks ago. You know, Jared Parker. First of all, this notion that, and I keep seeing this, that Jared Parker is Marcus Freeman's friend. He won't fire him. I don't believe that. I mean, I believe they're friends, and I believe that they have a history as of, you know, coaching together. But I think Marcus Freeman will make the hard decisions when it comes to his coaching staff.
I agree 100%.
Yep.
So they have three first-year coaches when we're doing the over-under. And then obviously mostly second-year coaches other than Mickens and O'Leary. I can't remember when O'Leary officially started. He was predated. Okay. Mickens and O'Leary are the holdovers. Yeah. So if they have four second-year coaches, three first-year coaches, and two holdovers that stayed with Marcus Freeman. Why am I missing a coach? Oh, special teams. They have four first-year coaches, Marty Bianchi as well. So it's definitely going to be over five. We'll be staying, I think.
Pete, in your opinion, Tim as well, maybe we talked about this a little bit on Monday. Would you, if Al Golden leaves, would you elevate Pete Sampson? Would you elevate Mike Mickens to defensive coordinator?
I heard your discussion on that. I don't know. I don't know if I would.
What I don't understand is, here's what I don't understand. Why fans are like, yeah, do it. You want a guy that's never been a defensive coordinator to be Notre Dame's defensive coordinator.
It's the same reason I think fans wanted Brian Hartline as the offensive coordinator, because he's an awesome recruiter and a good developer, a very good developer of his position. But that's totally different than being a coordinator. I don't know. I just don't know if I would, because it's like, it's not something that Marcus Freeman considered when he hired Al Golden. Has something changed in the last 2 years that he would now versus like going after like Joe Rossi at Minnesota again? I don't know the answer to that.
The argument for it is in the last 2 years is Mike Mickens has developed Notre Dame's best cornerback tandem in the country, which is impossible to ever imagine in the last 35 years of watching Notre Dame football.
He is a great, great position coach.
Yes, and that's why he's a possible coordinator going somewhere else in the future, was my entire argument Monday. Mike Mickens will one day expect to be a defensive coordinator. Maybe that has to be at somewhere not as highly thought of as Notre Dame, the top of the food chain. You might be looking at, how do you keep Mike Mickens? Who do you bring in a coordinator instead? It's a huge question for Marcus Freeman, because you don't want to, what if you fail at your coordinator call and you lose Mike Mickens?
Yeah, that's what, look, it's no disrespect to Mike Mickens. Along with what Sampson's saying, I think he's an absolutely tremendous cornerbacks coach. But, you know, part of the reason a lot of people didn't want Jared Parker to come in was because of his inexperience as a coordinator. And now you're saying Mike Mickens, and I realize a lot of that opinion is based upon the fact that he's develop these two sensational cornerbacks that were just absolutely, it blows me away how good they were against that group of receivers at USC. A lot of that had to do with the pressure up front, but
Ohio State.
Yeah.
I just, like, this is a question that, like, in all honesty, like, we cannot answer.
That's my feeling of this. That's why
we don't know what Mickens does behind the scenes with Golden, that like maybe there's some leadership opportunities there to craft game plans in a more significant way. I have no idea.
In fairness to Notre Dame, they are 4-for-4 in their last four defensive coordinator hires with four home runs.
Yeah. And it's like Al Gold, somebody like Marcus Freeman was the worst of the four.
I know.
I was going to say,
he only had 1 year. He might have been.
I don't know. Being promoted head coach, it's got to be a home run.
I don't know that that'd be a home run based upon that 1 year of defense, but
was his defense the worst of the 6 years, maybe, though? Obviously it was a home run. They got a head coach out of it, but like,
no, okay. I think probably true.
He was. That's insane.
Elko, you know, had Elko stuck around for a second year, it would have been measurably better.
Well, yeah, Clark Lee has the best unit of this whole group.
Yeah.
People did not like the Clark Lee promotion to defensive coordinator.
No, they didn't. And it worked out okay.
He was the best. Well, I mean, Golden's rivaling him now. But anyway, moving on from that, we think there are going to be coaching changes just like last year, and it will be another miserable January and February for us. Question from Joe Ty. This year's transfers have been a great addition to the team. Thomas Harper, Jean-Baptiste, Spencer Schrader, Devin Ford, and Sam Hartman all have made great impact on the field. What positions will Notre Dame look for in the portal this offseason?
I hope nickel, because I think I asked Marcus Freeman that in September. He kind of is like, well, we want to develop our guys, and I thought you should develop a fifth-year dude that's really great, like Thomas Harper again. quarterback is number one for me. I hope nickel. Don't think running back is necessary at all this time with the two guys coming in and with what you should have back. Now, obviously, somebody could just leave out of the Price, Love, Payne trio. Ford, even. I don't think he will. Kicker forever and a day for the rest of our lives. Let's think.
I've been set for a while.
Offensive lines and no, usually. Tight end is no. Tight end, you just can't somebody come in and sit on the bench forever. Let's see. Wide receiver is absolutely 100% unequivocally huge to bring in a player that can play.
Two. Timing in.
No, you're right. I mean, obviously, a guy like Javonte Jean-Baptiste, I didn't know he was going to exist in the portal. So anything like that is great at defensive end as well. Defensive end too. I'm with. Of this position, the only group not to bring in on these five positions is running back. So quarterback, nickel, defensive end, and kicker for sure. And as Priester said, two wide receivers.
I agree with all that.
Safety?
Well, it depends, right? Watt stays, Henderson stays, Schuler, Minnick, Carter. You need it. If Watt stays, you need it less because you have five plus your three freshmen.
Yeah, it would be sort of adjust to the hand that you've been dealt, depending on if Watts is here or not. But
so, this year,
quarterback is.
Yeah, that's essential. I'm gonna hop ahead to a question on that to address that. But first, I wanted to say that. So they have eight transfers this year. That's the most, right, that they've had, right? They will exceed that. I am predicting they will exceed that. They will exceed that. I was going to say easily, but they'll exceed
that. Probably won't be easily, but I agree they'll exceed. I'm with you. Yeah,
I do. I think the roster transformation will be significant. I do. More significant than last year.
And I agree with you, Tim, because a lot of guys were talking about staying in 6 years and all that. Like, some of these guys just don't want to stay 6 years. Nano Safamensa's graduated a long time ago. A lot of them are just ready to move on and try to play professional football too. And
yeah, I want to jump ahead to a question that kind of ties into that one. It's from Philadelphia Fell. How much of a priority do you think the staff will place on reviewing the 2024 quarterback situation, both during the bye week and the remainder of the season? Will there be actual game minutes? Based on the latest offensive performance, I'm not sure that will be the case. Is bye week and bowl prep practice sufficient to get an early read on 2024?
I think they have their early read on 2024, and I'm positive you guys agree with me.
Yeah, they're going to get a transfer quarterback.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I hope they didn't put a second into it bye week.
Who it is, I have no idea. But that will happen.
Actually, Sam Hartman should rest both bye weeks because I think he's playing hurt. But so if you want to look at that,
I would just wherever they go with that, I would prefer that they find somebody who has started.
I completely
agree. A lot, yes. Opposed to like, ooh, we recruited him and he's been a backup somewhere.
I think they'll do that, Pete, if the right guy is out there and wants Notre Dame. But you don't want to,
cone level, yes.
Yeah, you don't want to force fit somebody that is experienced, but you don't really like his ability compared to, say, a guy that's been in college for a year, which they can still, you know, in terms of transfers, it's easier for them to get a guy that's been in college for 1 year or a guy that's been in college for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, the freshman year of study.
Right. It's the guys in between. That are harder for academically, it's harder for Notre Dame to bring them in. So I think, to your point, it's the guy that's really experienced. But if he's not what you want, then you go with maybe the better talent that's younger.
I just don't know if the better talent who's younger is going to help you all that much. Like, it's just a huge gamble. And you already have guys on your roster to gamble.
No, it is. No, preferably it's the guy with experience, and we're confident in, where the three of us are confident in saying that that's the route that they intend to go, or they're going to look to going to. Question from Donnelly 3434. Notre Dame took a lot of three-star players in the 2024 cycle and looked to be repeating that to some degree in 2025. Is this hedging approach a reaction to losing Dante Moore, Keon Keeley, and Peyton Bowen, or a matter of circumstance, or both?
Isn't it always both?
Yeah, I mean, it's like if they had landed Justin Scott, and it would be phrased a little like they're still trying to get those guys. They're just really hard to get. So you'd rather have a three-star guy than nobody at all.
Yeah, and I think in this instance with this class, you know, Bryce Young, Kedron Young, there's two Youngs in this class, Logan Saldate. I mean, those guys were, and there are others, those guys were three stars that are now elevated to four stars. Notre Dame's not recruiting based upon how we in the business rank them. They're recruiting on guys that they think are, whether they're rated two, three, or four, that are legitimate 4 to 5 star players in their mind, that are good fits. That's always cultural fits, fit to the program, et cetera, is always going to come into play when you're talking about Notre Dame.
Yeah, I was going to say the three-star, they don't identify them as three-stars, or they wouldn't be going in on them that early is the best way of saying it. Whether they're right or not is not proven, but they don't go in early on a three-star because they think they better backfill at this point. Not at this point, but back in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a more of a December decision.
Yeah. Yeah, that has to happen sometimes. From Pin and Pull, what freshman does Notre Dame feel good about? Which freshman does Notre Dame feel good about long-term?
Yeah, it was freshman, not freshmen. I think we're obviously going to say more than a few names here. The first one that comes to mind for me, though, is Christian Gray. Right? I mean, that's a guy that they feel very, very confident that long-term he's going to be a really good football player.
Yeah, the obvious, or leaving the obvious aside, Christian Gray would be one and Traore would be two. Would you go that route if you go to 1-2?
Would we have said Traore a week ago now?
Yeah, what the staff feels good about Traore?
Yeah, I think we would have.
For sure, yeah.
I don't know that he would have been one of the first ones I would have mentioned. I would have said Osbury. I would have said Drake Bowen.
It looks like he's gotten Osbury down a little bit. He's got 4 games played and stopped.
Yeah, stop. I would have said Brennan Vernon, although maybe we like him better than they do. I'm not sure about that, actually.
Yeah, I don't know. All those are the hits.
They like Pendleton.
Pendleton, I did write him down. Cooper Flanagan's, obviously, they love Jeremiah Love. I think they're high on Adon Shuler.
Yep.
I'm sure we're. I'm
better
sure.
Mean question would be who don't they like, but that's. No, I would say, but Flores, Greathouse, Love, and Cooper Flanagan are givens. I mean, Cooper Flanagan's played seven games.
If you've burned a year, then they like you.
Yeah. Obviously, Gray has burned. He played 8 games. They like Jagasa, which is great news because we thought he was reporting in bad shape, and apparently he was not. He got rid of it quickly. And that wasn't a knock on him. He had a knee surgery, which we thought was
big. Yeah.
I personally would throw an Absher. Again, I don't know that they feel that way. I liked what I saw when we saw him in August. But that's a bunch.
Houston, Devin Houston was a 2-time scout team player of the week, if that means anything. I mean, Bowen's a great call. That's Drake Bowen got elevated too. That once you come, when you get elevated after training camp, they like you.
Yeah. This is an O'Malley special here from ND15 Irish. More ACC wins this season, Notre Dame football or Notre Dame men's basketball? For the record, Notre Dame has 2 wins over ACC right now. Wake Forest and Clemson still to come.
Are you going to include Stanford in there as well as an ACC win?
Oh, not yet. Not yet.
Push.
actually, push is probably
that's
probably the most likely.
Mathematically, it's not, but I think it could happen. You got to go four below or 6 or above, and 5's threading quite an
4-1 versus 4-16. That's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
For the record, CBS, I believe they had 5 or 6. Voters for the ACC season. There are 15 basketball teams. in the ACC, whether it was four or five, four or five or five of six picked Notre Dame to finish last. One of them picked Louisville to finish last and Notre Dame to finish 14th. So
the last year was three and they finished second to last. Louisville had two, but the next team was Georgia Tech with six. Can Notre Dame try its way to five wins? I say yes. I think Notre Dame men's basketball team will push at five or find a miracle. I still say push. I don't say below. I think Notre Dame will find a way to win two more games than they did last year. Last year they stopped caring at some point. There's not.
Yeah, that was they were good enough to win some more of those games. When they get blown out every game, it was usually a competitive game, and then it slipped away from them.
Yeah, I say Notre Dame's men's basketball team pushes or wins more.
Yeah, I say they're not going to be very good. We move on to a question from.
I agree with you on that.
And I might even go so far as to say they're probably going to stink. Question from Penny Cowers. And O'Malley, Priester, and Bryce will be going to every three games instead of every two, and that's a godsend. Question from Penny Cowers. Marcus Freeman is twice the big game coach that Brian Kelly was. How does he fix the issue of playing down to opponents such as Louisville, Stanford, Marshall, etc.? That ultimately will sink him if he doesn't get it fixed.
Can we go to every third media day too, Tim? Is that working out? Yeah, this is.
You take 5 minutes. You take 5 minutes. You take 5 minutes.
Now we're all going to be there today.
It's lovely.
We do have basketball media day.
Yeah, if people don't know that, I wanted to make sure we let people know that because they still don't care.
We have 15 allotted minutes with Micah Shrewsbury. Not more, but maybe less.
Playing down to the level of opponents such as Louisville, Stanford, and Marshall is a bit disingenuous in that Louisville's a top 25 team at home, and that place is nuts, and they have talent. Marshall is a FBS group of five team, and Stanford was one of the worst teams in the country last year. So playing down the level of the opponent is a killer for a coach at Notre Dame, because unless you have one of those breaks in the schedule, which occasionally happens, you also have a couple of really, really good teams that's hard to sweep. I said the number one thing for Marcus Freeman was to learn he could overcome adversity. By the way, it happened again. Somebody on the board keeps questioning me what adversity he's ever overcome. Again, overcame adversity to kill USC. It is hard to learn how to win and to win consistently and to, when you're pumped up by everybody in the world that loves Marcus Freeman and the Notre Dame football team right now, that's where it's hard to coach sometimes. Case in point, the next game.
Yeah, I think that, Marcus Freeman taps into the emotions of the moment more than Brian Kelly did. And I don't know if it's intentional or just sort of like his default setting. But the moment, this is why Brian Kelly didn't do it, is because once you start tapping into those emotions, there's the dip in the emotions too. And you have nothing in that well when you try to go to it. So I thought like one of the biggest growth points that I wanted to see from Marcus Freeman this year wasn't so much Ohio State, USC, Clemson. It was the other nine games. I think that we've kind of seen it, but I want to see Pittsburgh, Stanford, Wake Forest be three up, three down, and play well in that process. That would, frankly, that's going to be more informative to me than whether they beat Clemson or not.
Hey, Brian Kelly went undefeated in the regular season three of his last 10 years, right? Am I correct in that? He went undefeated during the regular season three of his last
10 years. Oh, yeah. Well, no, yeah. Like 11 years. Yeah. I mean, he didn't his last
year. They didn't play any big games in those years. Or
didn't play nearly as many as Marcus is playing.
Actually, they didn't, because when you look at not any, Tim, but when I was thinking about this the other day, you try to figure out the five biggest wins of the last 5 years, they're the same as the five biggest wins of the last 10 years.
Yeah, no, I get that.
I mean, Brian Kelly had four top 10 wins in 154 games, and Marcus has two in 22. I think that's right.
They didn't play as many either. They really didn't.
Well, I was going to say, Kelly didn't have a chance to play against a top 10 USC team.
But it still counts that he didn't. That's what I'm saying. He really did not.
I think Marcus has shown an ability to get Notre Dame to rise above the level of competition in big games, but he's still got to like I think Marcus Fina is a very high ceiling and a lower floor than you need right now. He's got to work on the floor. Brian Kelly was a low ceiling, high floor. And even though the ceiling was low, it was still pretty high, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, BK had three really big wins, I would say, at home in his last 5 years. Five years was his run, right? After 16. He had 17 USC. It doesn't matter if they're 10 or 12. They were 12 and undefeated. Sam Darnold. That was a great win. 17 USC, 18 Michigan, which ended up being an amazing win because Michigan was great until the very end of the year there. And, of course, 20 Clemson. But before that, like 15, he just didn't play a good enough team other than Clemson and Stanford, and they lost. 14, Michigan just didn't trend correctly. They weren't good enough, you know, and he went out to play USC, and it kind of broke badly a couple years for Kelly when they had good teams. Like USC wasn't that good during Brian
Kelly. He had a very down USC. Like over the course of his 12 years at Notre Dame, USC was like barely mediocre.
Like 1 year they went out there when they were broken and USC was really good and USC hung 49 on them.
I mean, it's like this year's USC game. It's the first time Notre Dame and USC has been a top 25 game in consecutive years since 2005-06. Skip over the entire Brian Kelly era at that point. Yeah.
He had three really big wins in that stretch. And then on the road, like Syracuse was a very big win at the time. It just sounds different than saying Ohio State or Clemson or somebody like that. But Syracuse is a 12th ranked team and one loss, right? When they played him.
What year was that? 18?
Yeah. They're number 12. They're number 12.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
No, it does not as much. I agree.
Like winning at Michigan State in 2012, like that was a top 10 game. Like it was a nice road win.
Yeah, the Oklahoma win was massive that year as opposed to the Michigan State win. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like Oklahoma was Oklahoma eighth, I think. Is that right?
Yep. It's almost like he beat really good teams that aren't classic programs, and that does hurt your perception of things. Like if you beat number 15 Utah, it's a really good win.
And look to Brian Kelly's defense, or maybe like a Marcus Freeman jury still out, like a lot of Brian Kelly's top 10 losses were in the playoff or the national championship game. Like
that's huge.
That's when you're getting top five teams that were like are on their stuff. Marcus Freeman hasn't played any of those games yet.
I just think undefeated regular seasons are a little bit underrated when you do it 3 out of 10 times.
We're not arguing against you. We're saying
they're accurately rated as being very important and hard to do. Like Brian Kelly beat human nature as a head coach. Like I have a huge amount of respect for his ability to do that.
Yeah. We're going to wrap up with a question from Tom, the intern. My projections model has Notre Dame finishing 3-1 down the stretch. Notre Dame is a minus 10 versus Pitt this is Irish Illustrated's Tom Zwiller, the intern who has a Zillow algorithm that he uses to predict games. So Notre Dame minus 10 against Pitt, 77% chance of win. Clemson, it is Clemson minus 1 with a 45% chance of winning. Wake Forest minus 10, 78% chance of winning. And then Stanford minus 17, 86% win probability. Is that fair given Notre Dame's performance and their remaining opponents?
I would make Stanford less likely as a win. I think Stanford is bad, but I'm not sure that I would go like 86%. And then Pitt is just, who knows? It's Pat Narduzzi. Like Pat Narduzzi doesn't follow the rules of math.
No, I was going to say, I thought you were going the other way, Pete, and I was about to lose it.
No.
I think there's a much better chance they beat Wake Forest than Pitt. I think they're going to win both games, but I'm saying I think it's hard. I also think there's a better than 45% chance they beat Clemson, and that I could at least put it at 52% or something along those lines. If I were to, I think they're a better team than Clemson, and they will play well in that game.
That's the way I look at it, Tim. They're a better team than Clemson, and I hate to say should because it's at Clemson, but
they should play well, though. They should be able
to play well. I agree. They should play well, and I'm going to go there expecting them to beat Clemson. How's that?
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think I'd be expecting them to beat Stanford, too. But, Pete, you make a great point. Stanford will come with a little bit more than I thought in that game. They'll have a little bit.
I mean, if Notre Dame will, they could potentially go to Stanford at 9-2, so they would have won five straight, right? Like,
yeah, only top 10.
I mean, should they hammer Stanford? Maybe, but like, I wouldn't mess around out there. Like, that's
no,
can you imagine the narrative that week? Notre Dame has played 12 games in 14 weeks, they're exhausted.
We wouldn't have felt that way about Stanford had they not come back against Colorado.
No.
I haven't really delved into Pittsburgh yet, and I know that the quarterback's numbers for Pitt that replaced Jurkovic were sub 50%, but he did some good things.
We wouldn't feel this way about Notre Dame if they didn't just do this to USC.
Very true.
Yeah, I mean, it's like every you're 100% days, going on.
Come on, man. That's
the transitive property of Notre Dame, USC, and USC Stanford. Notre Dame should win that game by 68 points.
Every 7 days, man, we got a different outlook. This has been a marathon of a podcast. We're going to wrap up with that. We'll be back on Monday as we start talking about Notre Dame versus Pittsburgh in Notre Dame Stadium on Saturday, 3:30, October 28th. No night game next up. That's good to know. Until then, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, Pete Sampson, this has been Irish Illustrated Insider.